this is for you. Welcome. Today is the last guest lecturer of the quarter, so I've saved the best for last. Yeah, you'll understand. But let's go through a couple of things first. How many people had a good time at the VA? Wasn't that fun? What did you see that or experience that really caught your interest, was the most fun for you? Fred?
I love going outside and getting into various cultures and
places. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was fun. Huh? Was that your first time in a power wheelchair?
Yeah.
Okay. Richard?
I was taking a look at the robotic walking aid with the enormous, $30 billion walking aid machine that straps on.
Oh, right. Yeah. I think the VA bought a bunch of those, but it still isn't clear whether, you know, how much benefit there is from that. Nobody has done really a good scientific experiment. I haven't. In fact, I think there may be two over at the VA, because we had one in our center. Yeah, the local mat. Anybody else want to offer their experiences? I got a bunch of pictures from that, so you can relive that whenever you want. So just a couple of things about looking forward to next year. I'm always looking for good project ideas. So if you have, if you can identify a problem and describe it in a way that students can work on it next year, I can post it on the website and perhaps there are some students who would want to work on a project as independent study next quarter or over the summer. So I'm always looking for a project. So if you think about one, you know, please let me know and I'll post it up. The other thing that I'm looking for as far as the course goes is Stanford doesn't really provide me or the course with any money to reimburse students or pay for the cookies and stuff. I mean, so I have to go out and hustle money. But the course will accept monetary gifts of any amount, and that's very easy to do. You just send a letter and a check, and I can help you with that in any amount. So you can do it in appreciation of being able to attend this year, or just to want to support the course. That's fine with me. And Fred, did you have something to say from the community perspective about that? Well, I mean, I have a little bit of money that offsets some of the stuff, but you know, I have to replenish it every year, so it's helpful. No, it's a Stanford fund, you know. Accepting gifts is easy. There's very low overhead on gifts, but if I engage in research or something like that, Stanford takes a lot of overhead from that. So a gift is the best way of doing things. So a gift means that you don't have no expectation of getting anything in return other than the satisfaction of donating. And if you have right. Yeah. So again, about projects, if you want to mentor a student team in a project, especially if you have an idea for a student project, that would be awesome for next year. The course is only offered in the winter quarter, so you have a long time to think about this, so keep it in mind. I have a few sign-up sheets here. A couple of them are new. Looks like the students have found the sign-up sheet for the time slot for their presentations on Tuesday. That's good. The other thing that we're having a week from today is a little end-of-term celebration. We're going to do, in this room, we're going to have a course evaluation. And as your reward for filling that out and your reward for participating throughout the year. We're going to have some pizza and burritos, so sign up for that over here, and drinks. And students will be bringing their projects to show off. And we're going to, I've reserved the Gibbons Grove, this barbecue area under the trees over here. Hopefully it won't be raining. So that's what we'll be doing next Thursday. That'll be the last class session. Okay? So for the students working on team projects, you know, the presentations are Tuesday, so there's not a whole lot of time left. It's the home stretch, so you got to, finish up. Again, I'd like to see, you know, something functional and testable and something you can report on. So that's what I'm looking for. If things don't go according to plan, you shouldn't make excuses because you've all worked very hard on your projects. Consider what would happen if it doesn't work out. I mean, in my senior project, I made this elaborate saline infusion device before they were commercially available. And another guy who was working on the project blew all the circuitry like the night before, so it didn't work. So that was very frustrating. But things like that happen, and I understand that. But you should have a plan, you know, if that doesn't happen. For students working on projects and team projects, please invite everybody that has helped you in your project, your people who suggested the project, any other people that you work with. Everybody's welcome to attend. So, okay. I've been through this. So next week is the last week, and we'll take a little break for 9 months. Okay. Assignments. Students working on individual projects. Reports are due on next Tuesday. Team projects on the 18th. All students working on projects are to work on their personal reflection, and that's due also on the 18th. If you haven't done a personal reflection and you have questions about it, please let me know and I can get you up to speed on that. There are some students who have missed some lectures, so if you're in that category, please get in touch with me so we can discuss that. And students who have incurred project expenses, after you've done everything else, it'd be a good time to deal with those documents. And there's a web page that tells you how to take the receipts and submit them to me so I can do the paperwork to get you reimbursed for your expenses. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay. So, a few reminders when you're doing your presentations or writing report. Always want to use people first terminology in every document you talk about, and keep that as a part of your thinking from now on. For presentations, it's really important that you practice it to make sure it's within the time limit. We have an eight-minute time limit again, so you have to be concise. You should include all your work from the quarter. Of course, you can skip over. You can make it very brief and concise, but there may be some people who don't know about your project, so you have to give them the storyline all the way through. Okay, but you need to focus on what you've done since the midterm. And of course, your device. It'd be good to show that off, have it here, or have a video. As far as your reports, it's really good to have somebody else proofread them because they can catch a lot of mistakes, and it makes a better final product. For your presentations on Tuesday, again, please send me your PowerPoint slides. So when I come in to work on campus on Tuesday morning, they'll all be in my inbox. I can load them on my laptop, make sure that everything displays correctly. If you're going to be using videos, please send them to me as separate files or link to them in your presentation. That seems to work. If you embed them in your PowerPoint presentation, that may not work. So I want to make sure everything works. And one thing that I really like to see is presenters to dress professionally. I don't mean a suit and tie, but, you know, sort of business casual, you know, no sandals or jeans or T-shirts, stuff like that. You know, for one time, I mean, you're not going to be a student all your life, you know. You know, so maybe, you know, for these 8 minutes, you know, you can dress like you're no longer a student, though, like you're dressed professionally. Okay. Again, for students who are working on projects, there's an opportunity for you to submit your project in a student design competition. There's lots of them around. I would recommend you submit to RESNA. That's a professional organization of engineers working in this in the field of rehabilitation and assistive technology. And chances are the report that you've done is probably 90% the way there to submitting, you know, what RESNA requires as a submission. So please check on that. And if you're one of the 10 finalists, you get you and your team get a paid trip to Seattle at the end of June to attend a conference. And so there'll be a sort of a chance for you to extend yourself to other students who are working in assistive technology and professionals who are working in the field. You know, other people like me. You know, I'm not the only one in the universe that is interested in this stuff. So there's other design contests. This is a new one called Create the Future Contest at NASA sponsors. So there's a bunch of them. So please consider that. Maybe it's something you can do over your spring break, because I know that, you know, you have a lot of time on your hands, right? Okay. So this is my favorite cartoon from a cartoonist who's a quadriplegic. Unfortunately, he died a few years ago. So, I mean, if you're a person like me, you might remember a cowboy picture where they see a stray horse wandering in the desert, and the posse says, well, he's not going to get far on foot, so this is a takeoff on that. So if you're not familiar with that film, you probably won't get this, but I like it. So Tuesday, final team presentations, but today we're going to have Ralph Hotchkiss. It's a pleasure to have him here again. We're going to take a few minutes to switch over, so if you haven't signed the attendance sheet or signed up for the celebration, you know, anybody who's filled out an evaluation form over the course of this quarter is eligible to go to the celebration next Thursday. So please sign up for that as well. So we'll be back in about 3 minutes. Okay. It would be good to for you to finish up. We should be out of here by 5:30, so leave time for questions. I think I gave you a lot more time than last year, so. Excuse me? Oh yeah. They did it on. Maybe it's daylight savings time on that one already. How come this isn't? There you go. Change the date. I updated the date. Thank you.
have Ralph here. I've known him for a long, long time. I think before either of us had gray hair, probably. Ralph is an inventor and lead designer at Whirlwind Wheelchair. His project, which is what we're talking about, is Whirlwind Wheelchair International. It operates out of San Francisco State. And he teaches a class there where students build wheelchairs for a third world country. The goal and mission of Whirlwind Wheelchair International is to make it possible for every person in the developing world who needs a wheelchair, and there's lots of them, to obtain one that will lead to maximum personal independence and integration in society. Not only is Ralph a graduate of Oberlin College and a 1989 MacArthur Foundation Fellow, but he is user number one of AutoCAD. So this is back in the DOS days.
82.
So he was a leader even back then. Let's give a warm standard of applause.
So could I hear what some of the projects are before we dive into pure wheelchair stuff?
Let's talk about them. Richard, talk about your project.
Our project is a soft drawing aid for people with hemiplegia who can't really reach their feet. So we're designing a device that allows them to put on a sock without having to bend over.
Okay, difficult, I'm sure. I've used some of the old ones. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, when I was a new wheelchair rider in 66, I couldn't reach my left foot because one of my joints had, it was blocked, stiff, calcium. And I tried several of the current ones then, and there was nothing that was any easier than just struggling and struggling without it. So I'm very curious what you come up with.
We are making several butt seats for unilateral tremors radio amputees, and we're mainly focusing on buttoning the cuff and buttoning like tight jeans, being able to do both of these with like a single hand, or especially with the cuff you have to be able to do it. So those are the things we're trying to figure out.
We're working on an iPod application as a game for students with autism.
That will
help with socio-emotional processing.
We're working on a prosthetic for a child with one hand missing to use the monkey bars.
So like a well-anchored arm with hook.
That's where we started.
But a real hook.
Yeah.
I bet.
We're working on a low-cost, lightweight, and aesthetically pleasing, portable ramp solution for single steps.
Okay.
And I'm working on a Michaela element device to help children be able to find their newborn and reduce the people.
I'm sorry, find their...
Inhaler.
Oh, inhaler. Okay. So kids with asthma.
Yeah, I'm working on a hands-free wheelchair wheel washer. Something you can just roll up on, it'll clean your wheels and roll
up. I need it. I'm underneath my chair I have a stiff brush that I carry, especially when I'm off-road in places where there's no pavement. One of the worst things I can do, one of the most socially embarrassing things I can do, is go into a house with a dirt floor and track mud in. Because it's really hard to clean a dirt floor, and they're usually spotless.
We're using a portable EEG device to clean the dirt floor container.
I could use it too. even as a regular person who's short on sleep.
Dennis, you might want to talk about your initial project.
I'm working on trying to design a wheelchair that basically, you can customize different parts on it, so you can add a chain, or you can add like a cup holder or something,
mm-hmm.
and it's all a universal like that.
Okay. I'm trying to do all of those things and half a dozen more for this particular chair as well. Maybe we can talk later.
I think that's it. There's a couple other individuals working on projects as well. Eleanor was working on a innovative way of creating storage space on a wheelchair to have it a place to put your cell phone, your money, and other personal belongings on a wheelchair that was easy to get to and secure. And Deanna reported on adaptive driving at the VA. She reported on all the equipment that's out there and how the VA assesses drivers and accommodates them.
Great, what an assortment.
Yep.
Some really strong-sounding projects. So I wish you all luck in tying it up in the next few days. So,
want to do the video first?
Sure.
Okay.
So this is a video that was done by Public TV about a year ago. Just some background on the project of Four Wind Wheelchair at San Francisco State University.
Wait, we need the heart-wrenching scenes from the earthquake in Haiti. The pictures of patients with crushed or missing limbs have inspired a special kind of response from thousands of miles away.
We can see people with new disabilities every day, and we knew already that the great majority of the wheelchairs in Haiti are.
Well, Ralph Hotchkiss rides his own wheelchair around the campus of San Francisco State University, where for 22 years he has run a nonprofit that develops sturdy, low-cost wheelchairs for underdeveloped nations and arranges for their distribution. With estimates of more than 2,000 amputations in Haiti, Hotchkiss's contacts there in the disabled community let him know immediately that thousands of patients would be needing the kind of chair he and his colleagues at World Wheelchair International have built and improved and distributed around the world.
We're having so far 350 chairs made in Vietnam and Mexico, and all sent to Haiti to be distributed to people both with spinal cord injuries and with amputations, either dual amputations, who
what they'll be getting, courtesy of non-governmental organizations, are wheelchairs priced at about $200, manufactured in small independent factories around the world. Those chairs are designed in this mechanical engineering lab in San Francisco, which is where Hotchkiss and his staff teach design and construction.
What we're going to start out with tonight is bending.
Hotchkiss got involved 44 years ago after he was paralyzed in a motorcycle accident. He learned fast that wheelchairs, even ones that cost several thousand dollars, weren't very practical.
My first wheelchair left in half, and the front wheel was ripped off by hitting a crack in the sidewalk. It was beyond repair.
As an engineer, he was studying and observing wheelchairs.
We started in 1979. In Nicaragua, I met young fellows who were sharing one wheelchair. I was riding a homemade, very high-tech chair at the time. They looked at my chair and said, well, you know, it's going to break in a couple of places, and I knew they were right.
He got some funding to do research, started working by hand, putting together parts like bicycle tires to make the chairs stable, more durable, and more useful in the rough terrain that is so prevalent. Third world nations. His latest model, the Rough Rider, is in use in many poor countries, and in fact, 50,000 Worldwind wheelchairs have been bought over the years by nonprofit groups and then given away. Hopkins and his staff test the theories on hills and in flower beds near the College of Science building.
That's hard today.
The reason I'm in this project more than any is to get help designing at least half decent wheelchairs. First one I received in 1966 is pretty much like most of them today. Well, you see fancy ones around the West Coast that run $3,000-$4,000 that are made of titanium, a few carbon fiber, a lot of aluminum. But they still aren't very stable. They're a little more stable than the old ones, the old hospital boxes we call them. But really they needed something basic. And I couldn't find it. I couldn't get much help in this country or in Europe, where I first looked for wheelchair inventors. But I found a lot of people in developing countries who were already building their own wheelchairs. They had received, in most cases, second-hand chairs from the north. And they had destroyed those chairs in no time flat. Just take them out and they break. Like mine did, half a block from when I first received it in 66. They said it was beyond repair, and they were right. It was not worth repairing, at least. And that was just from a crack in the side of it that broke my front wheel. Well, at the same time it broke the front wheel, it tipped me forward. Before long, I had a broken leg and a few other injuries from falling forward. I would fall 2-3 times a year, usually at night, usually in the rain, when I was rushing to get out of the rain. I would hit something, and that chair would tip forward. Well, why does it tip forward? Have you ever heard of the instability issues that the high-rise bicycle had? Back when bicycles had one wheel, say 5-6 feet in diameter, a little tail wheel, and they'd be rolling around along. They could hit a crack just a couple of inches high, and that would be enough to start them rolling forward. And it would go all the way forward, and the person's face would hit the ground. It was a huge injury issue in the 1880s. And that went on until somebody invented what became known as the safety bicycle. And the difference between the two, if here's the contact point of the front wheel of the bicycle on the ground, and here's the center of gravity of the person going that way. Here's the high-rise bicycle. decelerated just some fraction of a G because of hitting a bump or even hitting soft ground. And over it goes, because the deceleration is enough to put the vector from the person's center of gravity ahead of the contact point, and so it falls. The safety bicycle moves it back to here. Here's the seat, basically. A little above the seat is the center of gravity. Draw a line down to the front wheel. And you have to decelerate harder, usually, than you can do with tires on the pavement. Bicycle tires on pavement usually have a coefficient of friction of about 1, which means that they can slow down by 1G of deceleration before they slide on typical pavement. And if the center of gravity is up at a 45 degree angle behind that contact point, it might be on the verge of lifting up and going over, but it's not going to do it very often. And same thing was true with wheelchairs. A typical wheelchair today has a 16-inch track length, distance from rear wheels to front wheels. The center of gravity is right about at the belly button of the rider, 26 inches above the ground, more or less. So if that center of gravity is just a few inches ahead of the rear wheel, as mine is, I want to put the weight as far back as I can. And it's just a compromise between how easy I roll and how often I fall over backwards, which isn't nearly the risk of falling out forward, because it's not done at speed, because you don't pull very far, because if you have a bumper like I do on this chair, and if you learn to tuck, it's something you can handle. But falling out forward is a different cup of tea. So if here's my center of gravity, and here's my front wheel, like in a typical wheelchair, I'm just like the old high-rise bicycle. I only need to decelerate with, say, 2/10 of a G deceleration before I begin to tip forward. And so the biggest source of hospitalization of wheelchair riders from injury in the U.S. is falling out forward. Not sideways, not backward, forward. And it's a totally preventable problem. But I didn't know how to prevent it. I didn't have any real help in among the U.S. industry, the U.S. inventors. But when I found people in developing countries who, one, they were seriously working on inventing their own chairs every day, because they had these American chairs that just wouldn't stand up to the task. And thus, for example, I met 4 teenagers in Nicaragua sharing one chair, and they already had 20 welds in that chair. It had failed in 20 different places. And they had repaired all of them, reinforced them so it wouldn't happen again with the help of a very good welder who was lived right in their neighborhood. And they then had gone and replaced or reinforced the other side, the same places on the other side of the chair, so that it wouldn't fail in the same way on the other side. Their chair was great. It was kind of heavy. It made a lot of noise when it rattled on the pavement, but boy, it was strong. And thus, whoever got the chair that day could go clear across town, visit their girlfriend usually, or do a job, or maybe do both at once. And some of them went to school. They could all do what they needed to do, and they had some likelihood of getting back. Whereas before, they would usually have to come back the next day after visiting some mechanic or welder or bicycle maker. Of course, luckily they lived in Nicaragua, where real repair is available. Here, getting a repair, for example, on your bicycle is like going to the library. You check out parts and you put them on your bike and you pay for them. But there's not any real fabrication knowledge in a lot of bike shops, at least. There are only a few that weld, for example, that have the equipment and the knowledge to toughen your bike if it needs it. So they had already done all these changes to their wheelchair, and I could see that they were the help that I needed young as they were, to make my chair better. And so we went to work. We got money from the Carter administration to set up a shop in Managua. It carried on for a few years into the Reagan administration, but of course that wasn't quite what our government was interested in after we fell to the Reagan administration, I would say. But we got going really well, and when the U.S. pulled out its support, Sweden took over. That shop is still running, 30 years later? More than 30 years. And they and now another four shops all around Nicaragua and a few in neighboring countries have gone on to do really serious changes in how wheelchairs are built that have spread all around the world. The most important one was, though, didn't come from Nicaragua. The Nicaraguans were first to use it, but they found it in Zimbabwe. And that was the Zimbabwe wheel. It's a, if you can see my front wheel, it's wide, it's very soft, it's hollow in the sides. There's nothing there. It's very flexible. See how it bends? If you can see that. It's just a donut of outer tire retread rubber, relatively soft rubber. And Zimbabweans had been importing wheelbarrow wheels, big pneumatic tires, for their push carts. Great way to get goods to market. But that didn't work well once it went flat. And it didn't last very long. They would typically last less than a year of good hard use. And then they'd have to buy another imported tire. Very expensive. But somebody in Zimbabwe invented this tire in a big 14-inch version. They're still all over southern Africa. And it was a tire that would last for years and years and never go flat. And was just as soft and only a little heavier and a whole lot cheaper. It could be molded in a very simple sandwich mold. Not a multi-part mold like you need for it, for a hollow tire, but just a simple sandwich, the simplest possible kind of mold. And they had the equipment there. Any country that has outer tire retreading can make this tire. And no surprise, the poorer the country, the more they retread their taxi and their truck tires. So they knew exactly how to do it. And the people who had been making that tire for some years gave us great advice on how to make the mold, how to get the rubber to go in there smoothly, how to make little divots and pores in the mold so that the bubbles would come out. And it was first built successfully for wheelchairs in about 1989, I believe it was. And we had been looking then, of course, for nearly 10 years for something good for the front wheel. But little did we know that the Zimbabwe wheel would turn into something so good for wheelchairs that we could actually shrink it from typically 7 or 8 inches down to 4 inches, make it 3 inches plus wide at the same time so that it wouldn't fall in the cracks, the holes, and the sewer grates. And put it under the toes of the rider without raising the feet. The footrests on a rigid chair hanging out like a cow catcher ahead of the front wheels have to be a bit above the ground or they're going to scrape and catch. That's one more risk. And with this one, you can put it under the toes, tip the feet back a little, get the knees low for fitting under tables. It turns out to be a smaller package, a shorter wheelchair all along, but a 50% longer track length. And so I can ride this as hard as I want, and I cannot tip it over forward. In the 12 years that I've been riding this type of chair, a long wheel-based chair, I haven't fallen once. And again, it was two or three times a year, every single year, usually at night, often in the rain, that I would hit something and fall. And So thank goodness those days are over. It's all riding much rougher than I used to. And the risk is pretty much gone. Just like going from, again, the big the high-rise bicycle to the safety bicycle. We haven't yet called this chair the safety wheelchair, because it still does tip over backwards. But that's next, and maybe one of you will end up getting involved in our class at San Francisco State and be the one to come up with some of the key breakthroughs that we're lacking to make that practical, light, cheap, simple. What I think it needs, a regular wheelchair at least, unless it turns into something radically different, which wouldn't bother me in the least, but what has worked for me are spring-loaded wheelie bars. That allows me to move these drive wheels even further forward, right to the point where I would tip over every time I sneezed. But then have a rear wheel with spring loading that gives me the same resistance to tipping over that my weight does now, or even more. And that'll also eliminate the biggest waste factor in wheelchair riding and wheelchair propulsion, and that is downhill turning. All the weight on the front wheels pulls the front wheels downhill. All the sidewalks, all the edges of the roads are tilted for drainage. So to go in a straight line, watch a wheelchair ride. Not necessarily on this campus, because you have very flat roads. I know I just crossed about a half a mile of campus at high speed, and boy, it was a nice ride. But if you're out on real roads, on the edge of the road as usual, where the slope is greatest, watch a wheelchair rider. They'll be dragging one hand and doing all their pushing with the other. I can go a few blocks, and I have to go around the other side of the street to wear out the other arm. That's how bad it is. 50% plus of our energy on a typical outdoor run goes to downhill turning, to trying to go in a straight line in this very unstable vehicle. But if we move these wheels even further forward, we don't have weight on the front wheels, or very, very little. There's very little downhill turning. And you can come to a side slope that's quite steep, like a driveway crossing a sidewalk, and coast clear across it, come out the other side. With a regular wheelchair today, you have to come virtually to a stop and struggle across to the other side. And so if somebody can come up with ways to keep the chair foldable, more important in other countries than here, because public transportation, the buses typically put the wheelchairs on the roof. It's very hard to handle them if they don't fold. And strong and light and all of the other things that are important and very cheap. Boy, that'll be a nice chair. I know, because I've spent years riding similar chairs where I didn't yet have it worked out for the marketplace, but I certainly had it worked out to try the concept. Strength is critical. The chairs have to take all the force you can give them. They have to just handle your weight. They have to be impassable for a person of whatever weight the chair is designed for. Typically 220 pounds would be the smallest chair, the lightest chair. It has to be able to handle, plastic. In Nicaragua, they get lots of chairs from Europe and the U.S. secondhand, and when they come in, they're always laughing, and they say, plástico significa quebrado. Plástica means broken. Plastic means broken. Like this. We don't use much plastic. Here's our first plastic piece. Suspender guard. We've been using sheet metal for years, but this is lighter, cheaper. Some shops will never use it because they don't have the capital for a mold. But this fender guard is in high demand from people who ride in the mud all the time. You can tuck your jacket down in between you and the fender guard, and that keeps them out of the tire. Yeah, so it has to be strong enough so that you really cannot break it with your own weight and strength. So you can go down whatever as steep a hill as you can handle, as fast as you want, ramming into whatever on the way. And too bad, the only one that suffers is whatever you ran into. Let me show a few. Any questions yet? Let me show a few pictures of some of the people who we work with. Some of the history of our project. There is there's one of the teenagers I first worked with in Nicaragua. Now she's with her grandson, going around her own neighborhood with her long wheelbase chair. She became one of the chair builders and has been teaching welding and sewing and all the other tasks we do to dozens of people ever since. She's still building. She just put up a new shop, a new bigger shop. And she does a lot of repairs and reinforcing of chairs of people in her town of Chinandega, northern Nicaragua, right on the Honduras border. There's Kenya. I'm following a 15-year-old boy who had just finished building his own, what we call first half-decent chair. Notice those are short wheelbase chairs. They're tipped back 12 degrees. The seat is thus a little lower. The wheelbase is about an inch longer than typical. And so that cut the tipping problem in half. But that was just the beginning. I mean, it was better, but it wasn't good enough. And we knew it. We did what we could. Now, I would say we have, you could say it's infinitely better now because I cannot tip it over. I cannot get up enough energy to lift myself up and over the fulcrum to get it over. And that young boy had been thrown out of school when he was in third grade and he broke his back, fell off a fence. And every year his mother would take him back to school and plead with the principal and be thrown out once again. This time he was on the way to school with Panita Mutinda, who is one of Kenya's leading disability rights advocates. And she looked the principal in the face and lied point blank with a straight face herself, saying that the Americans with Disabilities Act had a exact Kenyan counterpart that had been passed and that he would be arrested and imprisoned if he... And he believed it. The kid finished school. Of course, the kid had a bit of a head start. He didn't have to start in third grade. Within a week, he was in high school. He was already fluent in English, learned from doctors. And quite good English at that. In Philippines, one of our guys, there's one of the earlier longer wheelbase chairs. See the metal fender panel? And if you draw a line straight down, it's about like some mountain bikes, the angle from the person to the front wheel, from the center of gravity to the front wheel. There's an old standard chair in India. Way too big for the woman because in India, like in the U.S., back 20, 30 years ago, that you had a choice of large or extra large. And that, sure, it fit everybody, but for the majority of people, you were reaching way out to try and push the wheel. The wheels were vertical, so it was lousy leverage, much different than pushing straight out from your shoulder. And it was done really for the convenience of the manufacturer. And at least that chair folded. She could fold it up and slide it under her cot at night when the house was wall-to-wall cots. She definitely didn't want to leave it outdoors. It was so poorly painted it would rust like crazy. And again, the front wheel's in the backward position now, but if she was rolling forward, her wheelbase is very short. Yeah, one of the Nicaraguan shops. That guy's a great mechanic, inventor. These days, our little shops have a lot of competition from China. 60-year-old designs, like my original chair, are being manufactured by the hundreds of thousands in China and sold for very low prices, sold for prices lower than the cost of the materials in any other country where I've worked. We can't even buy the parts to build a chair for the price anybody can buy a complete chair from China, provided you buy, say, 1,000 at a time. That would be 3 containers full. Those chairs are often dumped in countries. We call it dumped because the people who get them aren't fit, end up with wide, extra wide. They people end up with chairs that they can't get repair parts for because they have to send to China to get them. If there are little shops in the country where these shipments of chairs arrive, the little shops go out of business at least for a while until at least half of the new chairs are broken. There's almost no wheelchair industry until those chairs have... Until people have a reason to buy a locally made chair. Unfortunately, a locally made chair typically costs $200. That's a lot. That could be a typical worker in most of the countries gets about 50 cents an hour. A skilled worker, that could be even a welder or a machinist. And so just do the numbers, say $1,200 a year, $1,000 a year income, and $200 when you don't have enough money to provide food or to pay the outrageous school fees for your kids. I hear Kenyan school fees have gone up significantly just in the last 3 years. The cost of a wheelchair at those prices is outrageous. So we're trying to work as best we can with some of these bigger donors. Some national governments, some United Nations, people who buy lots of chairs, usually in China, and distribute them, various church organizations. And some of them, once they've given away enough chairs to realize that those chairs have a very short life, are willing then to pay $200 per chair for a locally made chair that will last for years and years. A good number of our chairs from 20, 30 years ago are still working in Nicaragua. Of course, they've all been fixed a bit, but they are working. And they were made to be fixed, like a good bicycle. I mean, you can fix a bicycle as long as you want, if it's a well-made bicycle. Paint it once in a while, keep the rust down. And so we're trying to work with these... some of these bigger donors, and we have shops in half a dozen countries now that can fill up a container and ship it to any other country, and it's working. There have been about 30,000 chairs sold that way of our types of chairs in the last 5 years, 4 years, 4 years. We're new to this. We're new to big business. We're used to working with basically tailor shops that make the chairs cut to fit. And so now where everything would be made to measure, now our chair has how many? Some 30 different size combinations for height, width, length, all the details. And we've persuaded the big donors to send assortments in their containers with lots of spare parts so they can swap parts around and get most people to fit right. Fitting is so important. In a back when wheelchair racing was fairly new, the men would set all these great records and the women would be left in the dust, and the men, of course, they know why that was, the tough guys. Until 1974, a couple of women radically cambered their wheels. Women with a little wider hips, a little narrower shoulders, were pushing even more out of line with their more, less in line with their shoulders if they had vertical wheels than men were. Everybody was disadvantaged by that factor, but the women cambered their wheels until the hand rims were right in line with their shoulders, they're pushing straight. They beat most of the men, set a whole new set of records. The next year the men did it too. There's never been much difference between men's and women's times since then. So that was great progress. Our wheels are all cambered as a direct result. Not so much as a racing chair, because we couldn't fit through the skinny outhouse doors then. But it works. It gives us more lateral stability as well. Quicker turning, because we have more leverage on the ground. And that's not only great on rough ground, but on the basketball court and on the dance floor too. I mean, people do a lot on the dance floor. Yep. But they better take their backpack off first. Somebody had a project of secure storage. Here's mine. Right close to the center of gravity. I like it there because it has very little rotational inertia. The chair still feels light and easy.
No, I noticed you right here.
That could be. That could be. We'll have to measure it. No, there's no reason for it if that's true. Shouldn't be true. So, other questions? More questions? Yes. Not much, unfortunately. I've been meeting with them since before they started, because they're right here in Danville, and they're great people. We get along very well, but they have been primarily buying the standard 1950 model Chinese chair. It's a copy of an American 1950 chair, and it's a good copy, but there's been progress in the last 60 years, and they make enough profit that it's been really hard to turn them around. They buy their chairs. Well, I won't give you the exact numbers, but if anybody's curious, I buy parts in China a lot for these chairs. Because, for example, the bicycle hubs in our front wheels are the same worldwide, and most of them come from India and China. And in the process of buying lots of parts in China, I've learned exactly what the costs are there. Yes.
I have a couple of questions. One is, I notice you require an awful lot of upper body strength to handle the wheelchair. What do you have, or is anybody doing similar things for people like who have a stroke, which only have half the body?
A stroke is a tough one. To go, not to do anything but go in circles. People like my great aunt, who at 101 became a hemiplegic. She luckily had one foot that worked pretty well. So she'd shuffle with one foot and push with the same arm, and she could go wherever she wanted. So when people have that, then it's a question of making sure with a low enough seat that you have good traction on the ground and a long enough foot stroke. But other than power chairs, there hasn't been much progress.
There are one-arm drive chairs. Max Cleland, U.S. Senator, rode one of those for years.
Still does. Or still did. Now he's riding mostly a power chair, but power chairs are the leading solution for hemiplegics. And both in the
tricycle version, one arm steering, tiller steer, electric tricycles, or four wheelers, or a full power wheelchair with a joystick. I wish there were better solutions. We're always looking. Yes.
There's a company that we heard from this year that makes a lever drive wheelchair that's coming along. It's going to be on the market very soon now.
And where are they?
They're in Los Gatos. Rodham Mobility. And their design is very nice. And so a person can operate, can propel with one hand.
Mm-hmm. And steer at the same time.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I want to see it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, they were just in the advertising for the mobility magazine. They're just now they're out.
In new mobility. I'll check it. It came in the mail the other day. Great. Wait, I'll find it. Okay. Yes.
Question. When you were bouncing around like crazy, show how durable the I wouldn't call it a vehicle. The
bike.
I thought I saw a little light flashing.
Oh, that's just something from the bike shop. That it's a valve cap with a little LED lamp in it.
Is it like sensitive to impact, so you know when you're...
Yeah. Yeah, I whack my wheel before I cross the street at night to turn it on.
Okay.
Yeah. LED technology is great for wheelchair riders. Here's my favorite. And that's good enough that I even use it in the daytime when I'm in really, really crazy places like Kuala Lumpur, where crossing the street is just like playing Russian roulette. What's that? It's from a little Chinese-owned company. Near Shanghai, and these lamps are virtually indestructible. And they last. I don't know how long they last. Nobody knows how long they last because nobody's had them long enough. It's like our front wheels. On these front wheels on the wheelchair, the longest. We don't know how long they last because the longest we've tested one pair is 10 years running. And we measured 1/8 of an inch of wear. At that rate, maybe 25 years. Depends on how much sunshine the rubber gets and the quality of the rubber.
Well, doesn't it seem like any sort of suspension?
Yes. Yes. Going back to the 70s, there have been
half a dozen chairs on the market with suspension, manual chairs. Power chairs, a lot of them have suspension, but that's another whole can of worms. The biggest problem that most of them had was when you push down, you go up, and you lose some energy. There are ways to do it. If you had a swing arm that went from down low to up to your axle, a sprung swing arm,
then when you push down, you'd be pushing parallel to the swing arm, you wouldn't go up and down much. And that might work fine. If anybody is curious, I can give you sketches and you can work on it. But suspension is nice. We haven't... There are plenty of front wheel suspensions, the frog leg, $400 a pair. Very popular in the U.S. I don't have it on this because the Zimbabwe wheel works just as well. It's just as springy as a sprung fork, one. And two, if the wheel is moving because it's got a suspension, then I have to raise my knees to get my feet and clear it.
and I don't want to raise my knees. I want to keep the suspension all below the axle. Pneumatic tires also, of course, are great suspension as well, if you can afford them for the front wheels.
Yes, it was,
but manufacturing on the local level is really hard to keep up. And so we're trying to set up a new system where our half a dozen bigger shops send parts kits. And the local shops assemble. They can do that much more quickly and have a higher volume. And thus, even though their markup will be smaller, they still might be able to stay alive. And then they will also do the fitting, the modification for somebody with a special disability, and the repair. Repair is almost a non-profit activity because few people can pay what it costs in time and parts. But
kits.
They provide some, and. Just sending a few extra kits is the most effective way to start up a shop with spare parts. Yes.
So one of the things to note is that in a lot of these countries, there's no such occupation as physical therapist or occupational therapist or people who are into, they know a lot about seeing professionals.
Yes.
That's a big problem.
We try to work with bicycle shops as best we can. Most of the bicycle shops in most developing countries are much more equipped than ours are. Most of them have welding equipment, for example, and they really know how to use it well on very thin metal.
So do you think it'll be a good thing or a bad thing when China starts copying
you? Oh, I'm hoping it happens. I'm hoping it happens. And in fact, we're working right now in Shanghai with two factories that want to copy. And I believe in competition. And the workers in China, I was last there 17 years ago, I went there just a few months ago, and the typical wages of the workers I interviewed, not the bosses, but the workers, had gone up by a factor of four for similar skilled from about 50 cents to $2 an hour for skilled workers. And it's curving up exponentially, so it's so I think that we'll re-enter into a competitive marketplace with China eventually. The hardest part about competing with China is not so much the high skill of the Chinese people, at least the ones in the factories where I've been and worked with, nor their wages. It's the vertical and horizontal monopolization that's going on that can fix prices so low. For example, for tubing.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Project for stadium seating.
Oh yes, it disappeared. That was for Chicago for the Olympics. But Chicago didn't get the Olympics.
Yeah.
I'd rather go to Rio anyway.
Yeah.
yes. Roger's great high tech telephone.
I suggest that we thank Ralph for his presentation. I'm sure Ralph will stick around, so if you guys want to get a close look at Ralph's chair or ask any questions, both, that is possible. Otherwise, I'll see everybody else who has a great weekend. We've got to sign.
for the great feedback.
Thank you. Very good presentation.
Your name?
I learned a lot, Arlene. This is not my field.
What is your field?